The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's start off with a Reader's Digest, kind of a serious one this morning to start off about health. I survived a stroke. Recovery is possible for most anyone if you have enough determination. I stood in the bathroom doorway of our Vancouver Island home watching my wife Pat prepare to go out to lunch with friends. As I leaned against the door jamb and took an eyeful of the women I have loved for close to half a century, I felt a bit odd. Not nauseated or faint, simply odd. Perhaps a bit weak. Nothing that a brief lie down wouldn't cure. I bid my wife au revoir and drifted to sleep. When I awoke, 2 hours had passed. I made my way to my study, sat down at my computer, and noticed my right hand was sluggish. This was definitely strange. I developed the habit of searching the web for the peculiar things happening to my body as I got older. So I typed stroke into Google. I can't say why I typed stroke and not flu or Lyme disease or heart attack. I found the common symptoms: sudden numbness and confusion, trouble seeing or walking, dizziness or severe headache. I also found several tests. Can you raise your arms? Can you smile? I lifted my arms above my head and I smiled. So I told myself, you're not having a stroke. Still feeling tired, I went back to bed. I had the flu, that was it. Although the image of my uncooperative hand still nagged at the back of my mind. And I still felt odd, perhaps a little lightheaded or dizzy. About 4 p.m., Pat came home. You're still in bed, she remarked. Yes, I admitted. Another hour passed, and I still felt odd. Finally, Pat insisted we head for the hospital. At last, I thought, as we were shown into an exam room, we can put an end to this nonsense. The doctor asked for a detailed account of what had been happening. Then he performed a number of tests. He asked me to touch my nose and then follow the finger with my eyes. He told me to count backward by sevens. He had me squeeze his two fingers with each hand. He tested my reflexes. I passed every test, so I thought what I'd been experiencing was just a temporary malfunction of the wiring. I'd like to keep you in for observation, the doctor said. My jaw dropped. Didn't I just pass your tests? You might be having what we call a stuttering stroke, he explained. It happens over several hours, perhaps even over several days. You're likely had a number of mini strokes since this morning. If that's the case, the likelihood of being struck by a larger stroke is very high. He told us someone would be along as soon as there was a free bed. Pat sat behind me working on a crossword puzzle while I squirmed in my seat. I remember trying to find a comfortable way to sit, something I suddenly found extremely hard to do. Then the light started to disappear, close in on itself into a tunnel. Soon there would be no light. There would be an absence of everything, of everyone, of Pat. I'm dying, I said. I was terrified. Diagnosis confirmed. I could hear Pat calling for help as I slowly slid to the floor. The room filled with intense white light. I was surrounded by people who hoisted me onto a stretcher and whisked me into a treatment room, where they inserted an IV and attached me to monitors. I could hear bleeps and peeps and people assuring me I was in good hands. What is happening to me? I asked. My voice sounded like an old phonograph record spinning too slowly. The words seemed heavy and thick. I see Pat standing in a corner, fear in her eyes. The next thing I knew, my clothes were being removed. My pants came off. My arms rose above my head and my shirt slipped off. Aren't you a lucky man? The nurse said to me. You've got five women undressing you. I laughed and agreed, but it was dawning on me that my movements were no longer voluntary. The lights dimmed. Pat kissed me on the forehead and departed. I was alone. I remember nothing else about that night except the vague recollection of being shunted back and forth through fluorescent glare, never conscious of where I was going. I had been sedated, which was a good thing, or I may have plummeted into the black hole that engulfed me. I curled up, thinking the fetal position offered me the most reliable protection against free fall. When Pat returned in the morning, she told me the doctors had confirmed the diagnosis. I had suffered a stroke. How severe it had been, no one knew yet. It would be another 36 hours before I was told what I never, ever thought possible, that I might be paralyzed on one side of my body. Soon I would learn that not only could I not move, but when I went to form words, my tongue was heavy. My vocal cords twisted. My words were strangled. as I lay there. The confusion was overpowering. Everything seemed so vague, so alien. Nothing made sense. No matter how hard I tried to slot a sight or sound into a compartment of my brain. In the afternoon of the second day, a woman came to my room, and I said I'd been assigned a bed on the fourth floor. Pat packed up my belongings, and the porter rolled me up the acute care ward, past people shuffling along in nightgowns and patients in wheelchairs. As soon as I had been transferred into the stretcher to the bed, a curtain was whipped around its track, and I was partitioned off from the rest of the room. A nurse told me, "If you need assistance, just press the button on the pillow. Someone will come running." I don't even know what kind of magician she figured I was. I couldn't reach the button, and even if I could, I lacked the strength to press it. I yearned to close my eyes. I could see that Pat was anxious to get home, but I think she feared she would be abandoning me. Finally, I said, "Go, please. I need to sleep." My sleep was interrupted by people taking my blood pressure, my pulse, my blood. Any of us who've been in hospitals know that. I was made to sit up and swallow several pills. When Pat arrived mid-morning the next day, I woke up torn between panic and a huge sense of relief. Panic, because the stark reality of what was happening was finally beginning to sink in, and relief because my most reliable connection to the outside world was seated at my elbow. She would protect me, I was certain of that. Later, I saw a face peek in around the curtain, our daughter, Nicole. I wanted to leap out of bed and embrace her, but all I could do was lie there like a beached whale. It's unsettling to have your children see you vulnerable, and for a moment I felt desperate, almost ashamed. I had always assumed my daughter saw me as a figure of strength, as someone who would protect her. I had a sense of having let her down, of disappointing her. She leaned over and kissed me. "Oh, Dad," she said, "I'm so sorry." "Me too," I said, sounding like I was chewing on rubber bands. Ready for rehab. That afternoon, a rehab doctor appeared at the end of my bed. At first he told me they thought my stroke was fairly mild. Nothing showed on the CT scan, but a second scan revealed I'd had an ischemic stroke, an obstruction in a blood vessel on the left side of my brain, resulting in the paralysis of my right extremities. "What caused it?" I asked. "We don't know. I'd guess hypertension. Your blood pressure was very high, but you have other conditions that could have been one contributing factors." "The good news," the doctor said, "is that a bed has become available in rehab. You will be put on a 6 to 8 week intensive rehab course, followed by 8 weeks as an outpatient. You need to be willing to work hard. What do you think?" "Yes, I can do it," I answered, although at the moment my body suggested otherwise. "Count me in." The next morning, Pat and Nicole were both there when a man and two women arrived to take me for a walk. With one swift movement, they had me perched on the side of the bed. "We'll walk as far as Nicole, okay?" I stood, slightly stooped, looking across the room at my daughter. I shuffled my left foot, lifting my right foot, dragging behind. Each step seemed like a gigantic task. I almost lost heart halfway across the room, but I refused to give in. I walked a distance of only 20 feet, but Nicole seemed excited and applauded. "Oh, Dad," she said, "you did it. I'm so proud of you." "Congratulations," the therapist chimed in. "You ready for therapy?" "I'm so hungry," I said. "Even a bowl of gruel would be nice. I numbed her slipped in my wrist and took my pulse. "We're not allowed to give you anything to eat, not until the Swallow Lady has been to see you." I stared up at her. "Swallow Lady? Who's that?" "The speech therapist. We don't want you choking on your food." "I can swallow," I said. "I've been swallowing a bucket full of pills." "Yes, but that's different," she said as she disappeared behind the curtain. The Swallow Lady. She carried a notebook and a pen and a bag that contained saltine crackers, some pear applesauce, and a box of juice. The Swallow Lady. "Are you ready for tests?" she asked. "Yes," I said, ready to show her I could swallow. She leaned over the bed and placed her Fentleys gently on my throat, twice swallowing for me. What could be easier? But my mouth was dry and my throat constricted. I couldn't swallow. "The harder I tried, the more my throat tightened up." "Relax," she said. "Try moistening your mouth." I managed to work up some saliva. Then my chin pushed forward, my neck stretched, and I swallowed. "Good," she said. "Everything appears to be working." She scribbled in a notebook, then passed a cracker to my good hand. "Now try eating this. Do it slowly, in little pieces." Immediately, I took a good-sized bite. The cracker stuck to the roof of my mouth. I couldn't chew, and I only managed to spit it out. "Nibble," she said, "tiny bits." I felt like a fool. How can I not swallow? But I did as she suggested, taking a tiny bit of cracker, and then swallowed. Good, now try this. Sip slowly. She poured a small amount of juice into a paper cup, and I drank it, forcing myself to concentrate on each stage of swallowing. The therapist smiled. You've done well. You passed the test. For the first few weeks, your food will be menstrual period. You must eat and drink slowly and carefully. This is only one of the many things you're going to have to relearn how to do. Relearn. Relearn? That word would become a mantra of my therapist community. Restoring what has been damaged in a very complicated process. Rehab and relearn. My first night in the rehab ward was terrifying. Alone with my thoughts, I no longer felt like I belonged to the human race. My brain kept taking tours of my distant past. I drifted in and out of sleep, and through the night, I wept. Yet memories, I was convinced, were the one touchstone I shared with my old self. They worked like a metaphor to help establish my new claim on being a part of my brain was damaged. But other parts seemed to be working, overtime, to compensate for what I had lost. Thankfully, Pat would not let me feel sorry for myself. Nor was the staff tolerant of any quitting. As I traveled through the halls in my wheelchair in the weeks to come, I heard a chorus of voices raised in a song of healing. Rarely did I hear anger or annoyance escape anyone's lips but my own. That first day of rehab, I had an appointment in the gym. Do you know the way? One of the nurses asked. I realized they expected me to wheel myself to the gym. Good luck, I thought. I couldn't begin to go in a straight line. My right arm hung lifeless in my lap, and when I pulled with my left hand, I did donuts spinning in circles. Drag your left foot along the ground as you push, a nurse advised. When I tried, I made it a few yards before I veered right and smashed into the wall. Perseverance, she called to me. I repeated the lurching motion, once again smashing into the wall, then continued down the hall, swerving to my right, almost colliding with an elderly woman. Then, to my surprise, I bolted in a straight line toward the gym. The next few weeks were a grueling process of relearning and repeating the simplest of movements, swallowing, standing, stretching. To regain movement in my damaged size, I practiced mirror therapy. The goal is to fool the brain. A mirror was placed on the side by my right shoulder, my right arm behind the mirror. Then, with my good hand, I performed several simple exercises, staring in the mirror as hard as I could. I drummed my fingers, formed a fist, flexed the fingers of my left hand. I did this slowly so my brain could take in the movement, pausing and then repeating it for about half an hour. What I saw, of course, was the reverse image. I thought I was looking at my right hand doing the movements, not my left hand. My brain was being fooled. Or was it? I wasn't sure. But I was determined to embrace this little deception. I think these exercises helped forge new pathways between the hemispheres of my brain. One day, after a few weeks, Nicole was sitting opposite me when she jumped to her feet and shouted that my damaged hand had mimicked the movement of my good hand. At first, I didn't believe her, but then I lifted my paralyzed arm and, too much to my amazement, flung it in a circle, hitting the mirror. I let out a whoop! I had movement in my arm for the first time since the day of the stroke. Going home. A week before Christmas, 5 weeks after my stroke, the rehab doctor came to see me one morning. By then, I was able to stand on my own. I had started to climb the stairs in the gym, hanging onto the railing. I could pedal the stationary bike for 15 minutes, and I was now able to transfer myself to the toilet without assistance. Sure, sometimes I became morose, but had taken a vow to retain positive and happy and recover. The doctor said, "Would you like to go home for Christmas? Then if things work out, you'll return in the new year as an outpatient for 3 months. I was both elated and a bit scared. "Who take care of me?" I asked. "Pat, your wife. Do you remember her, don't you?" he said. And then he smiled. "We think you're ready. Pat's keen to give the idea a go. We'll supply all your medications and requirements for the age you need. Medications and requisitions for the age you need. Wheelchair, walker, anything you make your home more comfortable." Okay, I thought. Being home was a good choice. As the doctor turned to leave, he smiled and said, "Merry Christmas." I spent most of Christmas Day sleeping, Nicole arrived the next day with her partner, Ian, and their daughter, Flora. As soon as my granddaughter saw me, she frowned. "What happened to Papa?" She was intrigued by my wheelchair and fearful. "They're my legs," I told her, "until Papa gets better." The sorrow I felt choked me. If my lips had parted, the whole neighborhood would have sworn they'd heard a lone wolf cry in the wilderness. As they were leaving the next morning, Flora said, "Papa, please get better." A year had passed before she felt confident enough to approach me and wrap her arms around my legs. By then, I was walking with a cane. Meanwhile, my weeks of outpatient therapy were momentous. But the benefits were immeasurable. I pedaled a stationary bike, climbed steps, and did leg lifts, squats, and arm pulls. I was finally able to pronounce a word without confusing the vowels and consonants. My emotional control was still fragile. I would weep when I saw scenes of poverty on TV. The silliest jokes could give me unstoppable giggles. I've learned that there is nothing smooth or predictable about stroke recovery. But then there's also no limit. The old notion that there is a limit and finite window to which to achieve rehabilitation is simply false. So, like most stroke survivors, I expect full recovery. It's unlikely I'll return to being the person I once was, physically, mentally, or spiritually. I have both lost and gained things that define who I am as a person. But with the advances in treatment and therapy, I believe I can continue to repair and rebuild and find a place for myself in my reconfigured world where I feel both valuable and valued. And there's a picture of the author and his wife, and I hate to say this, but this guy looks like me. Bald on top, white hair, white beard, and a little bit overweight, just a bit. Not facing facts. I refuse to think of chin hairs. I think of them as stray eyebrows. This is your brain on stress. This is the genius section, sharpen your mind. And there's a picture of one of those wooden pillar things that you stack and try to slide pieces out of without it falling over. Losing your cool when the unexpected happens can have dire results, but you can train your mind to handle chaos. On January 15, 2009, the crew of U.S. Airways Flight 1549 experienced a never-in-a-lifetime event. Less than 2 minutes after takeoff, some Canada geese found their way into the airplane's two engines and brought them to a grinding halt. Over the next 3.5 minutes, the crew managed to identify the problem, decide what to do about it, and execute what a former National Transportation Safety Board member called the most successful ditching in aviation history. How did the crew begin this historic performance? By uttering the same two words that many of us come up with in a crisis. Oh, crap. Actually, the phrase was a bit more profane, but you get the idea. We all experience oh, crap moments. Returning to the person you canceled the date with while you're on another date. Running into the person you canceled a date with while you're on another date. Realizing you hit reply all on an email that you'd do anything to have back. Earthquakes, medical emergencies, whatever the situation, the first thing you probably do is freak out. Everybody does. While many of us think that we're cool in a crisis, science tells us that we seldom are. At the moment, we need to be keenly aware of our surroundings. Our attention can tunnel into the scariest thing on the scene, leaving us oblivious to the other sights, sounds, and even smells around us. Armed robbers go unidentified because witnesses remember little more than the gun. Our ability to remember the things we do notice also becomes compromised. We can be told something and 2 seconds later we'll forget. And we jump to conclusions. When we're freaked out, we're anything but at our best. These normal human reactions can be reversed. Firefighters, Navy SEALs, and snipers are taught how to bring down their blood pressure, heart rate, and respiratory rates quickly, as well as help rein overreactive nervous systems. Box breathing, belly breathing, hum breathing, you can learn these techniques in minutes. Once you calm down, you'll encounter the most routinely ignored challenge of any crisis situation, identifying accurately what all the fuss is really about. We are apt to misdiagnose problems during moments of crisis because we don't practice for them. Do the thinking ahead of time as you can just fire all the solution when it's showtime? This is why flight attendants suggest you find the closest exit before you depart. so you don't have to go exit shopping after the plane has caught fire or is sinking into a river. Sometimes we aren't prepared with all the knowledge we need. Let's say we're on a hike and a bear shows up. Is the bear the one that we're supposed to back away from slowly, or is that a shark? I know that I'm supposed to sucker punch one of those two animals, but I can't remember which one. Better read suggestions on how to respond before heading into the wild. Performing in a crisis is becoming more important for all of us for two reasons. Back in the good old days, the reliability of most anything we used or did was far less than it is today. Engines conking out after takeoff. Pilots used to call that Tuesday. Today it's a rarity. So now think what happened to our preparedness as the likelihood of something bad happening shrinks. Unless we practice what hardly ever happens, our ability to respond when it does happen tends to slip away. Reliability can kill you. Also, the systems we use today are more complex. There are seldom moving parts in plain view that allow us to see where things are about to go wrong. When complex systems lack transparency, dire situations could come out of nowhere. Driver assistance technologies that help us steer, maintain our distance from the car in front of us, and alert us to impending collisions have started to become standard equipment. Our cars might fail to recognize something in a road, such as Canada geese, or steer us out of our intended lane. Ironically, the systems that were designed to lessen our workload might require us to remain in a state of increased vigilance in order to survive these increasingly infrequent events when they do happen. The Internet of Things promises to make our homes, our workplace, and our entire cities like this. As technology becomes part of most everything, and as once large risks get shattered into countless small ones, having the living crap scared of us every once in a while may become a standard affair. We should all learn to breathe, recognize the situation, and execute the plan that we were smart enough to prepare well in advance. Forsooth, Bluetooth! Bluetooth sounds high-tech today, but the word predates that technology and electricity by 1,000 years. The engineers who developed the wireless connection in the 1990s named it after King Harald Bluetooth, who united and ruled Denmark and Norway in the 10th century. How about some word power? Feeling lost? This month's vocabulary words are all about giving you directions, up, down, near or far, east or west, and so on. First word is starboard. Is that the ship's right side, the ship's left side, or the ship's front? Well, it's the ship's right side. Looking out over the arc starboard, Noah scanned the horizon, hoping to spot land. Transpose. Cut straight across, turn sharply, or move to another place. Transpose. Move to another place. Kyle's novel is a retelling of Hamlet, transposed to modern-day England. Nether. N-E-T-H-E-R. Down low. Overhead. Spread out. Down low. Why is my phone always lost in the nether reaches of my purse? Rachel complained. Anterior. At the midpoint. Behind. In the front. Anterior. In the front. I see that you've been floating your anterior teeth, but you need to pay attention to your molars, says Dr. Kim. Juxtapose. Lay on top. Put side by side or in circle. Put side by side. When you juxtapose the adjacent twins, it's impossible to tell them apart. Sinistral. That's S-I-N-I-S-T-R-A-L. From the south, underground, or left-handed. Left-handed. Did you know that the United States has just 8 sinistral presidents? Periphery. Great distance, classic range, outer edges. Periphery are the outer edges. My puppy is a bit shy. She tends to linger at the periphery of the dog park. Apex. Clockwise motion, uppermost point, or needle on a compass. Uppermost point. The Hollywood actress had reached the apex of fame by age 18. Away. A-W-E-I-G-H. Over the side, off the bottom, trailing behind. Off the bottom. Anchors away, boys, the captain shouted to his crew for preparation to set sail. Egress. Entrance, exit, shortcut. Egress is an exit. Are you sure this hedge maze has an egress? Recede. Pass underneath. Lean to the right or move back. Recede is move back. When the fundloaders recede from our town, the cleanup will begin. Laterally. Sideways, backwards, or upward? Sideways. Good basketball players must be able to move laterally as well as down the court. Pole star. A western route, the north star, or the southern tip? Pole star is the north star. Once I catch scent of the pole star, I can get my bearings again, muttered the lost hiker. Adjacent. At the four, neighboring, pressing down. Adjacent, neighboring. The sisters lived in adjacent houses on Chestnut Drive for more than 50 years. Abaft. At the rear of, on the border of, or downstream from. At the rear of. The private has a ritzy master suite. I'm sorry. At the private jet has a ritzy master suite abaft the main cabin. The Latin word orientem, meaning the rising sun, or to the east, gave us the historical name for the world's eastern lands, the Orient. The Occident refers to the west from the Latin occidentern, sunset, such as the winds and auroras or boreal from the north, and austral from the southern, hence the name of that down-under continent. And let's finish up the month of August Reader's Digest with All in a Day's Work. And there's a picture of a farmer milking a cow, and the cow turns around and looks at the farmer and says, "By the way, I'm taking off the first 2 weeks of August." A musician friend is always upbeat, but when she developed ringing in one ear, she was concerned it might overwhelm even her. When I asked her whether her condition was especially annoying to a musician, she shook her head. "Not really," she said cheerfully. "The ringing sound is the key of B flat, so I use it to tune my cello half a tone lower." Whoever said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results has obviously never had to reboot a computer. My paramedic team was called to an emergency. Before we took the patient to the hospital, I had a question for his wife. "Does your husband have any cardiac problems?" I asked. "Yes," she said with a note of concern. His cardiologist just died. I was on a business call. I realized I was late for a class at the gym. I must have sounded rushed because the woman on the phone said, "Am I keeping you for something?" "Oh," I replied, "I have to leave for Tai Chi." "Oh," she said, sounding intrigued. "What country is that in?" An esteemed colleague told me he hard-boiled eggs in the morning, uses them as pocket warmers, and then has his little mid-morning stack when he gets to work. Truly, the line between genius and madness is very, very thin. 8 people you will meet at work and the jokes that explain them. My boss told me to have a good day, so I went home. The helpful colleague. The high-priority email notification loses a bit of its meaning when it's used to announce leftover birthday cake every week. The grazer. Adorable idea. Colleagues have been writing the names of their food in the office fridge. I am currently eating a yogurt called Debbie. The complainer. Oh, you hate your job? Why didn't you say so? There's a support group for that. It's called Everybody, and they meet at the latest bar. The outsider. It's weird how many people in my office are named Hey. The perky one. Is there ever such a thing as too much coffee? I'm about to find out. The annoying guy. I wonder how many consecutive Mondays Todd will respond, "Not long enough," in regard to how his weekend was. We're at 7 so far. The suck-up. Our boss just banned overly specific nicknames, and the whole office is staring at Rat Snitch Brian, the good-time ruiner. And that, my dear listeners, ends the Reader's Digest for July and August. Next week, we will start in September's Reader's Digest. Now let's move to consumer reports and note from the president, digging deep into reliability. Growing up, I remember the constant hum of our washing machine working to keep up with the damage my 3 brothers and I inflicted on our clothes. I used to get a huge kick out of making time capsules that I would bury in the dirt, locking up my favorite toys, coins, notes, or family photos. I thought it would be so cool to find them years later, but I never could resist digging them up right away, earthworms and all. And all that dirt kept my clothes cycling through the wash. This is a woman, by the way, not a man. We all depend on our household appliances, so we search for value that lasts. But as many of us have learned the hard way, some brands are more reliable than others. And as products have become more technology complex, they're prone to more costly failures. The CR's quarterly appliance surveys, we hear from hundreds of thousands of CR members. They tell us they expose newly purchased major appliances, such as refrigerators and washing machines, to last on average, at least 10 years. However, our research shows that owners do get hit with disruptive repairs within the first 5 years. Little wonder that our members report that reliability is more important to them than either price or performance when buying each appliance. This is why we dug into our deep reservoir of consumer data on reliability to give you, for the first time, a comparison of 24 brands based on how reliable their kitchen and laundry appliances are across product categories. From washers to dryers, from ranges to refrigerators, you'll see each brand's strength and weakness. Thank you to your feedback, we're able to give you the tools you need to buy better and live better. When we choose brands that last, we also encourage manufacturers to prioritize reliability in their design and production. We hope this information helps you to make smarter choices and that it holds industries accountable to your needs. And building a better world together, lowering Rx drug prices. What's at stake? Prescription drug prices have been rising so steeply that some consumers are being forced to choose between their medication and basic necessities. One step toward alleviating the problem would be more and more affordable generic versions of brand-name drugs that are no longer covered by patents. But some brand-name drugs makers have cynically engaged in practices that slow the introduction of generics to prolong their not-monopoly profits. How CR has your back? CR has endorsed and lobbied for 4 bills designed to stop these practices. One would prohibit drug makers from paying generic manufacturers to stay out of the market for a particular drug. 2 others include prohibitions against pharmaceutical companies blocking access to the samples of their drug that are required to make generic versions, and against abusing citizen petitions to disrupt the Food and Drug Administration's review and approval process. The 4th bill calls for a thorough study of intermediaries known as Pharmacy Benefit Managers, or PBMs, to determine whether they act in the interest of the health plans they ostensibly serve or whether the rebates they receive from drug makers induce them to keep choices restricted and prices inflated. In April, the bills were approved by the House Judiciary Committee in an encouragingly bipartisan vote. CR will keep pushing to advance these bills through Congress and urge the President to sign them into law. What you can do? Read CR's advice on how to pay less for your meds and share your own strategies for dealing with rising drug costs at cr.org-drugcost0819. Keeping your data secure. What's at stake? In today's marketplace, the security of our personal information is increasingly at risk. When you go online, whether to a computer or a smart device, your data is being collected and shared by companies in ways that aren't always transparent, and rules for how your information is treated are scant. CR believes that we all should have more control over our personal information and that companies should be more open about how they use it. How CR has your back. The Washington State Legislature recently considered a bill backed by Microsoft and other tech firms that was touted as a way to give consumers more protection. But CR advocates found it to be too full of loopholes that would allow companies to ignore consumers' choices about how their information is used. CR called on lawmakers in Olympia to reject the bill, saying it would set a dangerously weak precedent. The bill died when the legislature adjourned, without bringing it up on a final vote. Meanwhile, the California Consumer Privacy Act, which CR endorses, is about to be implemented by state officials. It gives consumers important protections, including the right to know what information companies collect, to delete it, and to know whether it's being sold or disclosed in third parties. While industry groups are trying to weaken the law before it goes into effect in 2020, CR continues to advocate for the strongest possible practices. What you can do? Learn more about technology security and privacy at cr.org/privacy0819. Now it's the letters. Our June 2019 article, Sound Advice About Hearing Loss, revealed results of our member survey on hearing aids. It struck a chord with many of our readers. Thank you for shining a spotlight on hearing loss and hearing aids, which help the 48 million Americans who strive to live well with hearing loss every day. I'd like to offer CR readers additional suggestions. The telecoil would be the first of any list must-have features for hearing aids. The inexpensive telecoil sensor connects hearing aids wirelessly to room hearing loops that can transmit sound from public address systems or ticket window microphones directly into hearing aids. Telecoils now come with most hearing aids, but they might not be activated and people not know how to use them. With telecoils and telecoil know-how, many people with hearing loss can clearly understand PEACH in public venues. It's Barbara Kelly, Executive Director, Hearing Loss Association of America. Editor's note, your hearing aid provider can activate your telecoil and show you how to use it. You can find a partial list of public spaces with induction loop systems at hearingloop.org/loop, and that's LOOPEDLIVEVENUES, looped live venues. PDF. I've been used a hearing aid over the past 8 years, and I wanted to thank CRR for such a fine and complete article on a tough subject. You noted Costco is the top choice, and I cannot agree more. And service by the audiologist before, during, and after the sale has been exceptional. I purchased each pair for less than $1,700, and it is sad indeed that older people may be apprehensive about hearing aids because of cost, which can be $5,000 and up elsewhere. As a consumer advocate and audiologist, I feel compelled to write. The key to successful hearing aid fittings depends on the provider's adherence to best practice standards. Consumers need professionals who provide testing as well as connecting to counseling on telecoils, TV accessories, and public assertive listening systems. That way, expensive hearing aids will be less likely to end up in the dresser drawer. Thank you for encouraging people to get used to their aids, to wear them entire days in many situations, and have them adjusted if they are not performing as they had hoped. A company called Audicus has been offering hearing aids online for several years. You either take its hearing test online or send in one you have done locally. Editor's note, indeed, you can purchase hearing aids online from several companies. The price may be lower, but if you buy online, be aware that you might not receive the same level of support you get in an in-person appointment with an audiologist. And if you need fit adjustments, you may end up paying for a visit anyway. You list six must-have features for hearing aids. I take strong exception to the final item, rechargeable batteries. I paid some $100 plus for charger. Rechargeable batteries from Amazon, which last about 6 months, cost $10 each. Disposable batteries from Amazon, which last a week, cost 25 cents each. I wish I had started with the disposable ones. Bob Ebby, Chapel Hill, South North Carolina. Easing chronic pain. I just read the article Real Pain Relief Now, June 2019. There is no mention of chiropractic adjustments to stop pain. In 1990, I badly herniated some lumbar disc. Nothing helped until I tried a chiropractor. In 8 sessions, I had no pain. Not all chiropractors are the same, but with diligence, one can often find help without surgery. Editor's note, you're in good company. In a nationally representative CR survey, 83% of people who tried chiropractic therapy for back pain found it helpful. In our section on hands-on therapies, we refer to spinal manipulation, which includes chiropractic adjustments. If you go to a chiropractor, make sure he or she is a licensed professional. I was surprised that regenerative therapy using one's own stem cells and or platelets for orthopedic issues is not mentioned. Although it's not currently covered by insurance and can incur a significant expense, this is an alternative that should be considered from age 68 to 74. I've undergone several rounds of this therapy for chronic pain with great results. Editor's note, generally stem cell treatment for pains are largely unproven and may even be unsafe. The treatment you mentioned, platelet-rich plasma therapy, is still considered investigational by the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. It has become popular in treating chronic tendon injuries, but research is limited and results have been mixed. For more on stem cell treatments, go to cr.org/stem0819. Chronic pain is a long-term effect of disrupted postures, strength, and movement. But without a consistent, rational advice, most people lack the knowledge to discriminate between discomfort and pain. interjecting doubt and preventing many from pursuing the appropriate course towards healing. Our healthcare policies have promoted the use of prescription medication for productivity and to fulfill pain control criteria. There is usually little physical or functional assessment in a medical examination. We use EKGs to evaluate heart function, but we neglect to assess movement when evaluating the musculoskeletal system. Perhaps we would be preventing or minimizing chronic pain rather than having to treat it. I'm a physical therapist who treats chronic pain. Your article mentions physical therapy only briefly. Physical therapy as a whole is underutilized in this country. Physical therapists can offer comprehensive care for the chronic pain sufferer. We not only offer exercises and stretches, but can also perform manual therapies, instruct in mindfulness, manage inflammation, and provide postural modifications. Distracted driving. Regarding, choose an infotainment system you'll love, June 2019. Studies indicate hands-free calling or texting is distracting as handheld. There are too many accidents caused by distracted driving these days, and all the whiz-bang techno gadgets contribute in a growing problem. CR should be advocating to get that stuff out of autos, not how to use them. We agree that any distractions, even a hands-free task, are bad. The reality is that people will engage in distracting tasks no matter how much we tell them not to. If the system isn't there, they will pick up their phone instead. We tell consumers which car infotainment systems work well enough in the hope that people will choose to keep their phone out of their hands. Recall risk. Your June 2019 article, The Hidden Risk of a Used Car, was helpful, but it was also infuriating. Consumers have the largest stake in vehicle safety, and getting your own car recall status is easy. Why put the burden only on dealers, who in your article notes will pass that cost on to consumers? All sellers, including consumers, should be required to confirm the recall status of a vehicle before transferring the title, with the option of either disclosing any open recalls or having the repairs made. Moms use tool, too. And the best for $100 or less cordless drills. The text says, need a Father's Day gift for a dad or hubby? I'm surprised to see such old-fashioned attitudes in CR. I probably used our drill more than my husband has. Keeping cool. Your refreshing article, How to Beat the Heat, omitted a great alternative to both window air and ducted central air. Mini splits, a ductless system that allows for heating and cooling individual rooms or areas. They do away with dusty, complicated duct systems. Editor's note, though we haven't tested split ductless models recently, and our past tests all did a good job cooling and were pretty quiet to boot. Ant advice, that's A-N-T. I was disappointed that your article would get rid of ants' insights. Didn't mention more non-lethal options that won't pile more poisons into our environment. I've had success with peppermint essential oil that by spreading it where ants were entering. I've seen only a couple of ants since. I've heard of using cayenne and other methods, but the good-smelling peppermint also works for me. Ask our experts. My husband's snoring keeps me up at night. Would a change in his pillow help him? About 37 million Americans snore on a regular basis, according to the National Sleep Foundation. Both men and women snore, but men particularly, those who are overweight, are most primed to do so. Snoring is caused by a person's airway narrowing or being partially blocked during sleep, often because of floppy tissue in the back of the throat due to excess weight, nasal congestion, or enlarged tonsils. Wedge-shaped pillows that elevate the head and shoulders during sleep may help ease snoring, says Romy Hokyu, MD, and assistant professor of neurology at the Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta. The incline keeps the tongue from blocking the back of the throat. If your husband's snoring needs to be triggered by lying on his back, you can also try placing a body or bolster pillow against his back. This will help to keep him on his side, and he can consider an anti-snore pillow with a depression in the center designed to keep a sleeper on his side. But if you notice noisy stops and starts in breathing during sleep, or if he snores even while on his side, he'd be aware that obstructive sleep apnea, OSA, could be the problem. According to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, OSA is linked to lighter risk of cardiovascular disease, stroke, cardiac arrhythmia, and ischemic hypertension. So see a doctor if you think it's applied to you or your partner. Do I need a measles booster? This year, the U.S. has seen the worst outbreak of measles since the disease was eliminated in 2000. So it's important to assess whether you need a booster, says William Schaefer, M.D., an infectious disease specialist at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Anyone born before 1957, that's me, is considered to be protected against measles, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, because they were probably exposed to the virus as a child. But people born in 1957 or later who received the measles vaccine before 1989 may be more vulnerable. They were given a single shot, which is only 93% effective. A two-shot series, which is 97% effective, was started in 1989 and continues today. To complicate matters further, between 1963 and 1967, a particular ineffective version of the measles vaccine was used. So the CDC recommends that anyone vaccinated during those years get at least one dose of the current MMR vaccine. Not sure of your vaccination status? Your doctor or a walk-in clinic can give you a test called a titer to check your, that's T-I-T-E-R, interesting name, to check your immunity level regardless of what shot you may have had. But if you ask your insurer whether or not covers titer tests before you go, the prices may vary. CVS MinuteClinic, for example, charged up to $129 for immunity testing. It's fine to get a new MMR vaccine regardless. When in doubt, immunize, Schaefer says. I hand wax my car every summer. What can I do to make the wax coat last? Most waxes we've tested last only a few months when exposed to normal weather, says Dave Teresa, who has tested car waxes for CR. Even the very best waxes we tested faded to just 6 months. So you want to hand wax your car a few times a year with a change of every season. For the best results, we advise first hand washing your car, then applying a coat of wax to the dried, cool surface. Don't work in direct sunlight because heat can make the wax spread unevenly and clump. If you go to a drive-through car wash, opt for a brushless one because the brushes in an automated wash can strip off some of your wax job. Spray-on treatments at a car wash are mostly cosmetic, giving your car a nice but temporary sheen. It won't be the protective as hand washing. In the know, CR Insights. Should you buy an 8K TV? At more than 33 million pixels, tiny dots that make up a set's picture, 8K TV boasts four times the native resolution of 4K TVs, which have about 8 million pixels, or 16 times that of an HDT TV with 2 million. This enables an 8K display to produce finer, sharper images. Recently, we tested the 65-inch Samsung QN65Q900R, the first 8K TV in our labs. Claudio Gaiacci, who heads the TV's testing in CR's labs, put both 4K and 8K through the same test, with one exception. On an 8K TV, we also had to use a special test pattern that lets you see whether the set can display the full 7680 by 4320 8K resolution detail it promises. The Samsung TV aced this test, taking image detail to the next level. It was razor sharp. Despite being technically impressed, we don't advise buying this or any TV this year. At $4,500, the Samsung is currently the most expensive set in our ratings, even as prices on great 4K sets have fallen. What's more, the average viewer will find it almost impossible to appreciate the extra fine details of an 8K set at the 65-inch size we tested. And to boot, although there's a lot of 4K content available, there are no native 8K movies or shows yet. That means 8K TV must upscale lower resolution content, for example, a 4K movie you want to watch. That's not to say that 8K TVs will never make sense. They may in the near future. But dollar for dollar, we think a 4K is the best bet. And here's a list. Our 4K TV picks. These sets from 49 inches to 65 inches offer excellent viewing experiences. An 85-inch Sony at $2,500 scored 90. A 55-inch LG scored an 89 at $1,900. And a 40-inch Samsung at $1,100 cost 70, scored 77. Food Sleuth, how healthy is your granola? There are a lot of landmines when it comes to choosing granola, says Laura Pratt, Ph.D., chair of the Department of Nutrition and Dietetics at the University of North Florida. You have to be savvy to find the healthiest one. Some granolas are high in added sugars and fat, but they may not be easy to spot without scrutinizing the nutrition facts and serving sizes. Typically, serving sizes of granola, whatever we've seen, vary from a quarter cup to three quarters of a cup, are smaller than for other less dense type of cereals such as Cheerios. But when CR asked 124 consumers to pour out the typical amounts of granola they'd serve themselves for breakfast, most participants poured 2 to 4 times the labeled serving size, which means that 2 to 4 times the calories, fat, and sugars. That's why we recommend measuring out the serving before you put it in your cereal bowl. Don't want to pull out a measuring cup? Instead of eating a straight sprinkle granola on plain yogurt as a crunchy topping. CR tested, looked at 38 granolas and recalculated each into 1/3 cup servings for easy comparison. The pinks at right are some of the healthiest. No added sugars, Backroads organic granola, ancient grains, unsweetened. Avoid added sugars when possible. The Food and Drug Administration will require manufacturers to separate total and added sugars on labels starting in 2020. But until then, aim for no more than 8 grams of total sugars per serving, says CR nutritionist Ellen Kloss. Claims such as lightly sweetened are not regulated, leaving the interpretation up to the manufacturer. Has good fiber and fruit, bare naked granola, fruit and nut. Ideal, granola has at least 3 grams of fiber per serving. That will help you feel fuller longer. However, some of the granolas we looked at contained added fiber in the form of chicory, not fiber. Chicory root fiber. But it's not always better to get your nutrients from whole foods. In cereals, that means looking for whole grains, nuts, and seeds on the ingredient list. And then low fat and less calories are kind, healthy grains, clusters, raspberry with chia seeds. Keep an eye on fats. It's best if most of our granola's fat is made up of monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats from nuts and seeds, rather than saturated fats, which are likely to raise cholesterol. Granola mixes typically also contain oil, in some cases coconut oil, which can add significant amounts of saturated fat to the mix. And then we have the Consumer Reports time traveler thing, supermarket ratings. 1936, Samuel Goldman, owner of the Humpty Dumpty supermarket chain in Oklahoma, invents and patents the shopping cart. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. 1941, the frozen food aisle is not yet universal. The grocery store in Maryland tells CR that the equipment is expensive and that frozen food prices are higher than many customers can afford. In 1957, CR reports that supermarkets are top cigarette sellers, but 32% of total sales, more than vending machines and drugstores combined. 1961, with smart store brand comparisons, we help readers save $200 a year. Of these 3 mayo products, 2 store brands cost 55%, while Hellmann's cost 73 cents. And in 1972, Kroger becomes the first grocery retailer in America to test an electronic scanner on one of its stores. In 1976, Consumer Reports tells readers that they don't always get what they pay for when it comes to eggs. Our evaluation of cartons of fresh grade A eggs, which cost about a dollar, finds that they aren't truly fresh and many are not up to grade A standards. 1980, Whole Foods Market is founded in Austin, Texas, with a staff of only 19 people. In 1993, CR reports that errors made in automated supermarket checkout systems cost consumers an estimated $2.5 billion in overcharges a year. In 2019, our latest grocery store survey of 96 chains, the most we've ever rated, Trader Joe's is the highest rated national chain. Let's close out today with a few recalls. Toyota Yaris. Toyota is recalling approximately 43,000 of a certain 2015-2017 Yaris hatchback cars because the wire harness connecting the side airbag sensors in the front doors to the airbag control unit could corrode over time and cause the airbag warning light to come on. In addition, the front seat side and curtain shield airbags could be deactivated or not deploy in a crash. Toyota will notify owners and dealers will replace the wire harnesses in one or both doors as necessary, free of charge. Chest of drawers. South Shore Furniture is recalling about 310,000 library-style three-drawer chests because they're unstable if they aren't anchored to the wall, posing serious tip-over and extra transparent hazards that can result or death or injuries to children. These chests were sold online from October 2009 through July 2018 for about $60. Stop using the chest if it is not anchored to the wall and put it in an area that children cannot access. Call South Shore at 855-215-4932 or go to southshorefurniture.com for details about the models and the various options for refund or remedy. Coffee presses. Starbucks is recalling about 230,000 Bowdoin and Starbucks co-branded recycled coffee presses because the plunger knob can break and expose the metal rod, posing a laceration hazard. The presses were sold at Starbucks stores and on its website from November 2016 to January 2019 for about $20. What to do? Stop using the coffee press and call Starbucks at 888-843-0245 or go to Starbucks.com for instructions on how to return the press and get a full refund in the form of a store credit. Returns will not be accepted in stores. Anesthetic products. Hush is recalling about 275,000 anesthetic gels, sprays, and foam, scrap, soups, because the packaging is not child-resistant as required by the Poison Control Center. The product contains lidocaine, which poses a risk of poisoning to young children if they put a product on their skin or ingest it. They were sold online and at tattoo studios from January 2009 to November 2018 for $15 to $46. What to do? Put all of these products out of the reach of children. Call Hush at 888-723-3730 or go to hushanesthetic.com for details to get a full refund, free replacement product, or free replacement child-resistant cap. Well, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org or NorthCarolinaReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions, would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-513. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so very much for listening.